year when that guy, he kept looking at me, you know, they checked my size and everything. He said, yeah, that's him, that's all. But then it couldn't figure out that you know, my real age and that age. And then I thought, hey, I remember now, you know. I put my age up to get in there. Then everything kind of got straightened out, but, you know, so I had to re-straighten things after I did that. And I was in the service for 2 years. And then I didn't graduate. I graduated from Veterans High School. They had a high school in D.C. And I worked the shoe store, you know, every evening after. And, you know, in those days, you got a check, you know. You got like a $250 check. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, every month. So I went about 2 years to that school, and I graduated. It was called Veterans High School. Okay. You know, in those days, that's what you had. So that's where I graduated.
And you were gone 20 years.
Then, yep, I was gone. I'd gone 20 years. Yep.
And then what brought you back here?
Well, I was in kind of transition. Actually, the Cajun band. See, those guys had they were retiring. So I just took over, you know, the bookings, because we still had, even when I came back here, I still had about 50 gigs that I went back every week, you know, went back. And I actually, I came here to help this guy open a shoe repair shop. Uh-huh. See, so in D.C., when you asked me about, you know, learning, see, with the shoe store that I worked at, the owner, I knew it wasn't going to work, though, you know, he wanted to put a shoe repair shop in one of the stores. We had 7 stores, you know, and people would buy back shoes, you know. Somebody would work on them, something like that. But it wasn't a working thing too much. So the guys that I hired, see, in D.C., you had what you call, I think it was out of Spingarn High School, you had, like, trades, more or less than A's, B's, and C's. You know, you learned a trade. And you had many of those guys that, that you know, worked there. And that's how you hired somebody from there to work in that shop. So I learned a lot from those guys, watching them. I was all watching anyway. I never did anything but watch and learn and just taught myself pretty much. But but the owner, about 6 months into it, he didn't want to have anything more to do with it. So I ended up taking over the machines that was in the one. Because, see, we had the first place, we had the store, and the shoe shop right beside the place. But then they opened up a brand new store, and I was still the manager of the store, but my shoe repair shop was the first part of it. You know, it was still like a building. It had some old shoes there and things like that. But right across the street was the shop that I own now, but the owner didn't. You know, I just got those machines from him, and then later on, you know, I just kind of took over my own business sort of, and then I was kind of in transition a little bit with not doing shoe repair, just still doing some music. So the guy came here. I came here and helped him open up a shop, and then I worked. I worked, and I'd go back every weekend to do my gigs, and I kind of finished that out. And then after that, I came and went in business with a guy. His wife, they managed the Warner Theater, went in business with him, but it didn't work that well. She was a Korean lady. And boy, she was tough. She was tough, you know. And so we kind of parted, and then I kind of got in business for myself. And here, where I shined shoes at for all those years, I was in town in Westover for a while, and then I came and I was helping Willie anyway. You know, I'd just see whatever he needed done, and I would do that, and then make sure he's okay up on the hill there, and he got food and things. So I come one day on Saturday. That his niece, he had a niece and 2 nephews, never had a family other than that. And the niece came and they put him in a hospital, and from hospital to the rest home. And from there, and I'd go see him a few times at the rest home, but he never used the telephone. And, you know, never used the telephone. He'd walk off that hill and walk down here. And so I bought the machines off of the niece, and that's when I started, you know, in here. But Willie, He was trying to, he thought he would get out of there. Some, you know, he didn't want to call nobody but Albert, you know. Mm-hmm. Had the folks over there call me. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, needless to say, he wasn't coming back out there. When I would go over to see him, you know, and he'd be way back in the, in like the 50s, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, he hadn't seen his dad. His dad died in a 50s, and he didn't get his paper today, and I didn't get his meal, you know. He, you know, he was, you know, just going way back, you know. And after that, I didn't go, I didn't hardly go anymore, and he passed. but he was a nice man, you know, and that's the same thing here. Everybody looked out for each other, you know, and people would come in and sit down and wait for him to fix their shoes, because you didn't have but two pairs of shoes in those days, you know, a pair of clod hoppers and a pair of church and school shoes, so everybody got their shoes fixed. And today, they leave shoes at the shoe repair shop forever because they got more than one pair of shoes, you know. So that's the kind of difference. That's why you don't see any shoe repair shops, because, you know, people don't pick up shoes, you know, like they should, huh?
I would take mine to a shoe repair.
Yeah, a lot of folks, and you know, and but sometimes people want, you know, just like many things that I'm doing a job for the little young lady's getting married, and she got a nice pair of almost whitish looking boots, and and but her thigh is big in the back. And let me show you what that looks like. What's up, Whiskers? You listening over here?
Yeah.
Does Whiskers look
like? He's listening. Hey, Whiskers. Come over here. Come over here.
See.
Yeah, those are cool.
See, I put a little gusset in the back there, and then I told her dad to have her come and try them on, see, to make sure that you know, that gusset's okay.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm gonna put this
lace
on the back.
Nice.
You know, and that'll see all kind of jobs I got people bring to me, and all they have to do is tell me that they're getting married, or they love those boots, or you know.
Right.
So they've got me. When you say those things, you know, you put me on the, you know, and Al's gonna fix them, you know, whatever kind of way. But yeah, that's, you know, we talked about Osage, you know. It's probably a good place to grow up, you know, as a person. And when you go to places like D.C. and California, you know, you can hang out anywhere. You know how to, you know, treat people and how you're treated. And all the places I've been, you know, I mean, I've been treated like royalty. You know, there's no place, but there's one thing. It's always that I, even in all the places back in the old days, you had all the Fonzie guys, you know, outside, you know, that would make sure that Al, if anybody says anything to you, you know, because I'm only black, all the places I played, you know, I'm the only black actually in the place, you know. Mm-hmm. but if the music was good, everything's good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it always was. If the band's bad, they're going to be fights all night. You know, but if the music is good, everything's good, and we were good. That band, see, this is in 1962 when I left. If this band could have traveled or anything like that, you know, in D.C. and California, there was no Beatles and no Motown and all that at that time. You had more, it was more bluesy type thing. These guys could outplay anybody in D.C. or California.
Mm. And was it like a four-piece?
Well, actually, Dave Whiston, who was like the sheriff's son, he played keyboards, and then we had Ed and Keith Collins. Ed was a horn player, Keith was a bass player, Roger Britton was a drummer, and Ronnie Kemper was a guitar player. And that band was so good.
It was R&B.
Yeah, we did all the old, and then what we did also. See, and the reason I could like gauge myself on my abilities, you had all these groups that come into Pittsburgh in those days, all the million sellers. See, Pittsburgh was one of the big places. So this man in Latrobe, PA, he would have groups like, you know, the Isley Brothers, Marvel Etch, Jan and Dean, Conway Twitty, Bo Diddley, who we had here we had here, right here in Morgantown, we got Bo Diddley in here.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And Ray Peterson, Johnny Tillotson, Dion, the last job I did here in West Virginia was a Dion. Used to be Dion in the Belmonts, you know, but he was Dion by himself at that time. That was my last job in Parkersburg. And they would hire us to come and back those performers because they didn't bring a band. They just bought the performers, you see. So we didn't have to practice with those guys because when I would go to practice with these guys over at home in the Westover, when I go to practice with them, they'd have all the songs written out in the key of the performer. They never had a key for Al. All the keys were the same with the performer's keys. So I had to hit, either a woman song or a man. See, I had hit all, and I didn't know any difference. You see, here I am. I don't know nothing about music at all. So I'm just singing all the songs in the keys of whatever. And I probably sang for 25, 30 years before I even knew that there was a key that I sang in, a natural key. So I would do like maybe 20 minutes or something like that before the main a group would come on, bring the guys would come on.
Yeah.
So I'd do my songs, and then I'd open up for all those guys. Yeah. Conway Twitty. I don't think we backed him. But he was there. See, in those days, Conway Twitty was a rock and roller.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't a country singer in those days. And but he would be there in the Trobe, and he and a guy named called this one guy would always be there with him. But I don't recollect backing him, but he was always there.
Mm-hmm.
But all the others we backed. So, you know, the Isley Brothers, Vibrations, I mean, some of these groups, the Isley Brothers was big name, but the Vibrations was much better than the Vibrations. The Marvelettes, you know, they were like, see, all those are women, women's group, and, you know, but all the songs, you know, we didn't have to have no, they would always want us to come about 6 o'clock to have a practice with the groups. The groups are going to be the main show. If they're supposed to be on 9 o'clock, they'd be there a quarter till nine, you see. So they didn't need to anyway because all the songs we did was in their key.
Yeah.
See? So, and I think that's how my voice got strong in not knowing a key that you sing in.
Uh-huh. So you had to be able to be flexible and sing
just,
all of them.
Hit those notes, you know. And we're all riding together, you know. I'm from Osage, and all these boys are from Morgantown High, you know. I'm kind of slangy, you know, and out here. But Ed Collins, you know, used to make me mad for a while, you know. I would say, we talk, you know, I'd say 50 cents. Since Anderson, since. I mean, he'd correct me. I'd be so mad at him. Well, but then later on, you see, you know, that was a lesson. See, I was getting a lesson because, you know, he would correct me every time I would have a little slang, you know, but I'm from Osage, you know, and actually it was like, even if it was a white guy from Osage and those guys from Morgantown, it would have been like a little bit of a slant, but from the black guy from Osage now I was treated really good and it was a great lesson for me. And when I went, Whiskers want to get on my lap.
Okay.
You want to get Whiskers? Because, see, Whiskers, that's where the crowd work. You see, I was sitting over in a chair there, you know. When I sit in a chair to sew or something, the Whiskers say, okay, man, I can get a little lap time now. But no, it's been a good, you know, situation of, you know, being able to do all the things that you do and being, you know, hardly nobody, you know, hardly from this area here is like the, you know, the citizen of the year for the whole county, you know, and riding down. And I almost kind of thought it was a setup. I said, you know, I didn't want to ride downtown in that on a convertible car because I'm thinking like, you know, somebody going to take a shot at me or something, you know. So I had to sing after I got down. You know, to after, you know, where everybody's singing down at Hazel McQueen, you know, because, and I'm telling, well, I got to sing as soon as I get down there. Oh, no, don't worry about it, you know. And So there I am in a car, you know, with, you know, Citizen of the Year on the side. And, you know, and I was 1 year as a Martin Luther King, a recipient of that award. And, you know, things that you do, you know, that, that you know, you're recognized, you know, in certain areas, but you just kind of just do, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, on the board of the United Way for about 8 years and Settlement House Board for about 8 years. And still today, I'm, you know, the president of the Lions Club in Westover, mainly because, you know, nobody's able, you know, every year, you know, we, you know, because we're trying to get more members, you know, but right now, used to be loads of members that was in, but now most of those folks have passed, you know, like the older, the older members, and being on the board here, you know, and I think what we have done, and especially we know that, I don't know when that documentary is coming out, you know, but it's way overdue, I think, because many people, that will be seen all over. Right. I mean, this was a show that was unbelievable. You know, everybody that did music, everybody that told stories, and Eve, you know, did a great job of doing, you know, putting all that together, and they wanted to put musicians from here, you know, that I work with. And I said no. I brought my buddy in from Philadelphia, Jeff, another guy from Pittsburgh, and Jeff played with me 30 some years ago. He was a young, young guy, you know, but well, we tore that theater up over here. I'm telling you, it was really something special. Cool. And then they played it because nobody got to see it after that. And when Liza brought it down to the museum and played it, you know, and I tell you, I was sweating, you know. I mean, I was wore out just watching it because I never, you know, you never get to watch yourself, you know.
No.
And boy, I tell you, all that, I said, oh, man. I was wore out, you know, because I sang with the gospel group before I sang with my rock and roll group, you know. But that's been a blessing also, you know, and I did gospel like forever. You know, we did gospel with Sister Sarah and, you know, Sarah's sister and Sister Patty and lady trombone player Christine Blonick. Oh, man, we played everywhere.
Was that Flying Colors?
That was the Flying Colors, yeah. And we did that theater for about 12 years. And we just, it's only been 2 years we did it with the new group that we have. But all the Flying Colors, we played everywhere, all over. And every place we would go, you know, people would, you know, people knew that group, you know, and especially that trombone player, and I'd kind of stand next to her, and if I would hit, the higher I hit that note, that horn would go straight up in the air, and boy, she could play that horn. I'm telling you, we had some times, and her husband died. He'd worked in the mines for about 40-some years, and he kind of fell. And never came back, you know, from that. And he passed. And she come from, like, the Wisconsin area. And her and Sister Sarah was like, you know, mother and daughter. Mm-hmm. And they were, like, you know, together, like, all the time. Mm-hmm. But that group. Sister Patty played keyboards, but then with the group called, would you say? yeah, the Flying Colors. But the Mighty Tones was the Sal family and myself. Oh, we were just all a cappella group. And we sang at those churches, and, you know, everybody, we would think that they weren't going to call us on. We'd think, oh, we're the last one to go on. Everybody's waiting for the Flying Colors to come on here. And we sang, you know. But it was just a whole lot of great things, you know, once you... And not even knowing your abilities, you know, of being a singer.
Mm-hmm.
See, evidently God blessed me with just a voice. Didn't bless me any other way, no instruments or no nothing. I never listened to music. You know, if you went to you would never know I'd never did any music or anything, because I don't listen to any music or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just practice, you know, like when I'm going to do a performance, again, I might practice the songs, make sure that the endings are okay and all that, you know. So but it's been a good life. Of only thing is I missed by not not getting back in touch with Billy Ward and them to be part of that, because see, I never performed with them. I never performed after I did What Do You Do New Year's Eve. Yeah. And once you do that, you see, when you see, Billy Ward was in the Far East about 6 months out of the year. So when you're the lead singer of the song that you're the front guy,
right.
You see.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine all those places, and I always looked at it as, you know, Billy Ward had that article in the paper like all the time.
Uh-huh.
Because if you got five singers, and see, Billy Ward wasn't a singer. He's a piano player.
Okay.
And he was kind of like Liberace. See, he had this big white piano and arm rings all on his fingers, you know. And then that's why Billy wanted the Dominoes, because everybody else was the Dominoes, but Billy Ward. But then you had lead singers, you know, like I would have been if I had went on the road with them. So, and the reason he had that article in the paper like all the time, because if you went for 6 months, you know, out in the Far East and Japan, Okinawa and the Philippines, now, you know, there's an awful lot of pretty gals, you know, in all those places. And 9 times out of 10, I would say 2 to 3 of those guys wasn't going to be on the show the next time, you know.
Yeah.
And some of them may have been sent back home even because there's a lot of story on Billy Ward. You could always read it at some point in time, but he was a hard guy. He was not, and I didn't really know. You see, to me, like my idol was Jackie Wilson. See, our voice was like almost the same. We had the same kind of style. But you couldn't mention Jackie Wilson's name out there because Jackie Wilson left Billy Ward in Las Vegas. You see, one of the shows, he left Billy Ward. And Jackie Wilson was not a name that you could say, who's your favorite singer? Surely it couldn't be Jackie Wilson, you know. And Clyde McFadder, who sang on, I mean, he had some of the best singers in the world, you know, that was Billy Ward's Dominoes. And that's the way I always thought about it, you know, that you know, you're going to act up somehow being out there in Japan, Okinawa, you know. So that was, but see, to me, I would have been just like Jackie Wilson. See, I was more of like a single singer. All the time I sang, you know, and then, you know, being that was like a stepping stone in a way. And then, you know, like Clyde McFadder went out on his own and built, but I guess Jackie Wilson did it in a way that while they were doing a show or something like that, you see.
I see.
But I've been very fortunate, you know, to, you know, have been all the places I've been and been, you know, the only thing today is some of the places I went after I even came back here. I wouldn't be caught in any of those places today, you know, because if you're way down here in Century, West Virginia, or you're down in all those other places outside Buchanan and all down there in the Elkins area and all up there, you know, as long as you ain't gonna have no problem on the road or something like that, you might be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if your car break down, you better not knock on no door.
Worse today than it used to be?
Much worse.
Really?
Much worse.
Why do you think that is?
Because, you know, there's people that always had hate in their hearts, but sometimes wasn't able to exercise it, you know, like there is today. See, people were exercising hate that they've always had, but today it's almost like it's legal to let that hate come out more, you see.
Uh-huh. Do you see that, like, with the new president, or
the new president is, you know, that's his mindset. You see, just what he's doing now, even with the immigration thing, you know, that he's called. You know, it don't have to be all that kind of trouble that he has, but you see, anybody that likes Putin and likes North Korean guy and any of those places like that, see, they're actually only one color face pretty much in Russia. And then you notice he don't like those other countries that are our friends. He don't like none of them, but he likes all these other folks who are, and I got guys on the radio, the killer. And all of them are basically killers.
They're dictators,
you know. But he, that's his, because that's his mentality, because see, he's a dictator. See, all of his life, that's what he grew up as, you know, and getting away with all. But I tell you one thing, he ran up against something that even this Mueller thing. See, oh, they're playing it up like, oh, they need nothing wrong. You just wait, and it's already coming out now. But he ain't got no clean bill of health, you know.
Right.
Matter of fact, there's going to be a lot of dirt that's going to come out, but it starts right there, you know. It starts right there. And if you turn off, like, all the hate groups, you see they're all coming out, and many of them are thanking him, you know, that they're able to show their bigotry, you know. But, yeah, it's much worse, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's
scary. So, you know, I mean, you know, we have a we should be a country of just people, you know, that you know, you don't, and see, he hated Obama so bad that, see, everything that Obama, he had to turn, even if it's a bad thing to do, you know, you know, he wanted, and like, see, one thing they can't get away from that Affordable Care Act. Yeah, they want to call it Obamacare, but they can't get away from it because all them have it, you know, and it's all them years when the Republicans had the Congress and the Senate and the presidency, you still can't get rid of it. So now he backed off of that, you know.
Oh,
and
because maybe, maybe not. He's trying to
end. No, they didn't told him. No, you know, when McConnell and all those guys, see, because actually they back him 100%. But when they put that in his ear, even with closing down that border, see, he would have did that. You know, even if you lose billions and don't care. Billion, you know, don't care. You know, all those folks that lost their clothes in the country now. You know, that was just a crazy thing to do. But then when you have people that are millionaires, billionaires, what do they care about the smaller people? You know, like, you know, the lady want to cut off, you know, the Special Olympics. You're going to take 18 million, going to take all that money away from there and think. Because, see, they don't even think about it, you know, because they don't have a thought of money, you know. So they don't need, you know, and people still working for $7.75. You know, who can live? You can't live very good on no $7.75, you know. So, you know, it's a sad way of life of what people are having to do. And they're, you know, they're talking about, oh, they have this, everybody has got all these jobs. You know, look how he bought jobs, you know, and black folks, you know, their job. Yeah, they have to work four jobs, you know, if you're going to make, you ain't going to have no one job today. So if you got, say, three jobs, yeah, your unemployment is going to be better because you are going to have to go from this job to that job to that job, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and so it makes him look good because, you know, but the wages have not went anywhere.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
The wages hadn't gone anywhere, but the jobs have. Yeah, yeah, you got to. And then they're cutting off so much stuff from people that you ain't got no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even people get food stamps now. I think you're going to have to work. You know, they're going to have to do some work. I mean, there are some things that should be, you know, people that are able to work that should be working, you know. I got a couple friends, you know, that they stayed in my place over there for a long time, and the young lady is still, you know, with the little dog, you know, because, see, you know, I'm the animal guy. See, all you have to do is have an animal, you know, and you know, yeah, and I won't kick you to the curb with the animal, you know.
Right.
And I got six cats in there, and they're like, they have to rearrange, you know, their understandings,
uh-huh.
because the little dog, you know.
Right.
And I love the little dog, you know, but see, both of them are, you know, they're on drugs for, you know,
mm-hmm.
and both of them stayed there for a while, and that boy, you know, he can't stand them, you know, and, you know, but everything I had back there, he, you know, I'm over here working, you know, and he's stealing about everything I had. Back there, my son had a lot of stuff that he bought from Atlanta because he had all them clothes and things. He had other things too, you know. That,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that boy, you know, stole everything. And then, mm-hmm. you know, he got upset. You know, I told him to take the dog out, and you know, he cursed me out. Oh, man, he raked. You know,
yeah.
He called. You know, so, but he come down here every day from up the road, up there about 10 miles up the road,
mm-hmm.
and. And then even they stayed over that hotel over there for for about a year, somewhere like that. And, And you see, the cigarette smoke. I'm going to tell you about, you know, and they both smoke cigarettes, like, you know, and I even buy cigarettes from time to time, you know, and here, reason I helped them over there so they would never come back over here. And then when they got kicked out over there, they was at a couple places that they stayed, but then they didn't wore out all their, even at his dad's house, you know, so his dad don't want him if he's not home, and his sister. You know, but, you know, things like that, you know, that yeah. It's like, you know, a cigarette does bother me, you know, and they don't smoke inside, but just the residue that you right. that you smell, you know, that, but it's a kind of a, you know, sad kind of thing, and sometimes your heart's bigger than your yeah. your knowledge, you know.
Well,
you
should, people have substance issues, too. It's a very difficult situation.
It is a difficult situation, and and always in a hope that, you know, they're going to do something for themselves, and they act like they are, mm-hmm. because you get on certain drugs, you get sick, and you get, you know, then you get on those hard drugs that you they're bigger than you, right, you know, right. You know, you can't conquer them. They're gonna conquer you, mm-hmm. you know, and I tell them, you know, you guys, you know, you just kind of say it. and the weather gets better, you know, then, you know, I said, no, you all going to be down there on the river like the rest of the folks, get your little tent or something, you'd be down there with all mm-hmm. your other buddies, you know, that yeah. in the same predicament that you're in, yeah. you know. But,
I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but could you talk a little bit about what the museum, just having that, has done for the community?
Well, it, you know, what it changed was people are understanding history of Scott's Run, history that people never knew. Well, you know, when people come there sometimes, because you're there a lot, you know, that people will come there and they're there for hours. A young man that came, he lived here. Well, he was there for, when I went down there, he was there, he was there. Tony, he grew up the road up here. He probably went to school with Mary Jane and them all, you know. And, but he's amazed, you know, and he grew up right here, you know. Yeah. And he's amazed at all, when you read the books, even though things that you lived, but he's a little younger than myself and some of the others, but you lived some of it, but you didn't live all of it, just a lot of it, that it was before you were born, that a lot of it was happening. But it's such a people, especially people come here that lived here before, you know, they are so proud of this place because they know that they know the history. When they left here, they know, they all work here, they all grew up here, and they left here 50 years ago. But they, and I've even got calls, you know, even that Golden Seal magazine, I've got calls from people that you know, you say, man, I was in a story you wrote about Osage and Scott's Run. Mm-hmm. And in the documentary that I did, they're playing that on PBS now too, I think, the one I did over at the other museum. But more stories you tell about, you know, and Lou, it's been a blessing, and John, been a blessing coming there, and all the others, and Sister Sarah, you know, they have stories that they're, you know, 15 years older than me, or in a near 10, you know, 12 to 15 years older than me, that can tell the stories, and the more that this happens, and when that documentary comes out, and I don't know, there's some kind of thing with that university over there, that they do not, they're dragging their feet about putting that documentary out, because this is going to be so special and so big that I don't even know if they even want to even do that, because the one professor, he left right after, before we even did the theater, I think, but he came out here because Ron Justice was